Thank you very much indeed. I'll sit down for a minute if I may. And, you know, that's very kind, but I, you know, I'm so sorry that I don't speak Catalan. I'm really sorry. But there it is. I don't. So I will try to speak English slowly, although that's very hard for me because I forget. So if you go slow, and then I shall slow down. I've done a lot of things, and I'm going to stand up in a minute because I can't talk sitting down very well. I've done a lot of things. I've led local authorities, I've led hospital boards, I've, you know, been a government advisor, whatever. But I've never done anything that's more important than what I do with Incredible Edible. And Incredible Edible, if I can just put it in a context of where it came from, and then many, many, many pictures. This is not death by PowerPoint. This is many pictures to illustrate the points that I'm trying to make. It started about 6.5 years ago. And it started because I was frustrated at what seemed to me to be a lack of leadership on the environment. Many of us, some of us, perhaps not many of us, you're all terribly young, remember the Rio Earth Summit 21 years ago. And that was where the world's leaders came together and said, we've got to stop behaving like we behave. We've got to think about what we do. We've got to think about the environment. We've got to think about the poor. We've got to think about health issues. We've got to stop using so many of the Earth's resources and be smarter in how we live our lives. We've got to, in essence, redefine prosperity. That's what they said 21 years ago. Now, if you have a look at press in the past 21 years, you wouldn't have thought they said that, really, would you? Obviously, huge issues, which I'm not underplaying, around the fiscal cliff, around jobs, and so on. But actually, to have that discussion out of the context of the resources we use in order to create employment, in order to redefine prosperity, is madness. So, because I've done all those things, and because, you know, I am bored to death with policy documents, strategy documents, you know, consultations, papers upon papers that committees consult and discuss and then put on a shelf. I've had enough of that. Because actually, we know that the world is not fair. We know that we overuse resources. We know we've got climate swings because of the way we have consumed in the past. We know the sea level is going to rise. We know, you know, and what we do know, actually, is that the poor will be the hardest hit globally. So we don't actually need another report to tell us what exactly the temperature rise is going to be. We just need to do something about it. And so 6.5 years ago, I was at a conference, a Landscape Institute conference. I am passionate about landscape. I'm a fellow of the Landscape Institute in the UK. I really care that we raise the debate about how we think about our landscapes and the people within them, and that this isn't a discussion for the few, it is a discussion for the many. So I sat in this conference, and there was a chap there called Professor Tim Lang. Some of you may know him, he's at City University of London. He was on the Sustainable Development Commission in the UK. Now, Tim is a very depressing soul. So, you know, by the time he'd talked about using up the planet's resources by the September of every year and all that stuff, you either thought, right, well, I'm going to drink a lot of gin or I'm going to do something about it. So I came out of that conference and I just made up Incredible Edible Todmorden. It's as simple as that. Because this is the time for action, is it not? Not words. So I got on a train in London. And 3.5 hours later, I was in my hometown in Todmorden, which kind of looks like that. And I'd made the whole thing up. And what I'm going to do is just tell you our story. I've put the context there as to why we did it. It's just an experiment. That's all it is. It's just an experiment that says, can we take a town like this? And maybe I can do this sitting down, although I might jump up in a minute. But anyway, we'll see. Can we take a town like this, which is a town of 15,000 people? And as you can see from the picture, it's quite challenging growing land. It's in the middle of a wonderful landscape called the South Pennines. Moorlands, you know, internationally important sites for wildlife, but quite difficult to grow on, unless you happen to be a sheep, in which case it's quite easy. And this is a town with the challenges that many places have got. You know, it's got unemployment. It's got health issues. It's got failing schools where, you know, there's a difficulty in engaging with young people around qualifications. It's got a lack of pride at times. It's got, you know, pockets of land that are badly used. And it's got what many places have got, which is people who have stopped believing in themselves. You know, we have brought up generations of victims. People who believe they would do something different if only X, Y, and Z happened. People who would do it if they had a piece of paper that said they were permitted to do it. People who would do it if they had a check to say they could do it. Well, actually, you know, we are not victims. And despite the fact that there is so much in the world that we cannot influence because we are not the leaders of nations, there is so much that we can. And Incredible Edible is simply a demonstration of, through small actions, what we can all do. And it happens to use the language of food. Because I thought 6.5 years ago, if this was going to be a movement, there's nothing like being ambitious, is there? If this was going to be a movement of the ordinary person, not necessarily the professional, not the people that read, you know, the intellectual publications, but every person, what would be that universal concept that we could all engage with? Well, you know, we've lived through the time of transition towns, and transition towns are wonderful, but they do on occasions engage in concepts that the average person finds difficult to grasp, peak oil being one of them. I have found it quite difficult to get people terribly excited about this issue, despite the fact it's very important. Sustainability. What exactly does that mean? It's not a word that trips off everybody's lips as they go to the shop or drop their kids off at school. And so on. So the difficulty of finding something, you know, that didn't put people off, that engaged people into thinking, yeah, I get that, I can do something about that. Food is the universal language. And not only is food the universal language, but it is so important. It defines our communities. It defines our heritage. It allows us to think creatively about the resources we have around us. It allows us to think about skills we might want to acquire that we might have lost. It allows us to think about the opportunities to create employment, enterprises that might contribute towards our general prosperity. Food, as a single point of focus, allows for maximum elaboration. It allows, you know, the web designers to do fabulous things. It allows the artists to do wonderful things. It allows the farmers to supply wonderful things. It allows all manner of creativity. And all you're doing is talking about food. So here's the story of Incredible Edible Tubman. And it starts in a place like this. And it ends with a place like that. It's exactly the same place. Incredible Edible Tubman does not bring with it sunshine all the time, I have to say. This just happened to be a sunny slide. What we did in Tubman to start the proposition was to create places like this, which we call propaganda gardens. You could call them guerrilla gardens. You could talk about guerrilla planting. But my mate, Mary, who kicked this off with me, because it was Mary whose house I went to when I got off the train and said, Mary, we're going to do something for the rest of our lives. And it's about food. And she said, oh, go on then. Yeah, all right. She doesn't like guerrilla. It sounds too aggressive. So we don't do that. We do propaganda. And the reason that we create edible propaganda gardens throughout our town, redefining landscape through edible, is because it starts a conversation. People stop. They taste. They ask. They remember. They're inspired. They hate. Whatever it is, it starts a conversation. And that's what propaganda gardens do. And we've got them all over the town, and I'm going to show you lots of pictures. But it's not just about propaganda gardens. Because here's the model. Now, the reason there are three plates, and it is three plates, as with your conference today and tomorrow, is because I designed this on a serviette on a train, and I couldn't fit on any more plates, so I just had three. So here's the proposition. Let us suppose we find the experiment using food to bring a locality, a village, a town, whatever, together and put food, local food, at the centre of our thinking. Could we redefine community? Could we rebuild resilience for the future? Could we inspire self-belief? And through that process, could we help people to see the space around them differently? Could we help them to connect with each other differently? Could we think about the future differently? Because it was our future and we had a little piece of the picture to put in place. It is not clever. It is very simple. But it's inclusive. It cuts across age, income, culture and ability. It is everybody's movement. We actually do have a saying. Because, you know, when we made this up, we didn't imagine we would have a steering group or a board or whatever. We didn't know what was going to happen. But people do like to see a structure. They just do. So we created one, which I'm not very keen on, but it's fine. But anyway, we have a membership slogan, which is, if you eat, you're in. So that means you don't have to pay anything or get a qualification. You just have to eat food. So that's pretty inclusive, isn't it? Right. So let's imagine we have community, a spinning plate, agitated purely by the people in a locality. Let's imagine food is at the heart of that. What people grow in their own space, what people see on the high street when they go to the doctors, or the school. Imagine we created edible landscapes at the heart of where we live, not just in the surrounding fields, but at the heart of where we live. Would that help us think about our relationship with our environment? Would it bring us back to a sense of seasonality? Would it change the way we think? Well, let's see. It's an experiment. Second plate, learning. Again, if local food was at the heart of learning, not just in our schools, but in our schools, so that local food was at the heart of the curriculum, whether that be science, geography, history, Spanish, whatever. Supposing local food was part of the discussion, would that help us think about future prospects that we hadn't thought about? And then if we married that on the learning plate with what we can teach each other informally in our communities. It may be completely different here than England. I can only tell you of my English experience, but in England, many young people and many urban dwellers have forgotten the basics of how to live well on little. How to cook well with few resources. How to think seasonally about food. How to challenge flying beans from the poorest countries in Africa so that we can buy them in our supermarkets. Slightly embalmy, but anyway. How to graft a tree. How to skin a rabbit. You know, all these things many people have forgotten how to do, but some people have remembered. So how can we exchange that information again in our communities and help people across age connect? And then lastly, if we have edible landscapes at the heart of our life, the community plate, and we learn new skills and think about the environment and seasonality, is that not likely? It is a reasonable proposition, I would say, that when it comes to business, we would want to support local businesses more than we do. And we would start to think about the power of the money in our pocket, no matter how little that might be. We are incredibly powerful when we think about it. We can choose whether to spend in a supermarket or on a local producer. We can choose. We can go back to the farm and see how those things were reared and decide whether that we wanted to support that particular producer or not. We could think creatively about how we, in a very small way, could help to redefine local economies. So spin all those three plates together and you've got theatre. Spin all those three plates together and do not be put off by sophisticates who tell people it is too complex. The issues of today are too complex for ordinary people to be able to impact on, because they're not. There are some things we can't do, but there are many, many things that we can do. And building prosperity in our communities is one of them. And my experience of this programme is that if you go halfway, people will meet you. People still with finances and support in the public sector will meet you. People from the private sector and philanthropists will meet you. We have got to lift, and God knows, I know it's hard, the negativity that dominates our lives. And we've got to start to look for the positive, because we can't build a future if we don't build a positive future. So let me show you some pictures of what we're doing. And it is a forever project, I promise you. You know, I've only been doing it 6 and a bit years. And I've learned a lot, and I've done a lot of things wrong, but we've done a few things right. So here's some pictures. The community plate. Okay, now I'm going to use my clicker. Oh, can I just ask you a question? I know I shouldn't. Yeah, I know I need to use this. Can you hear me at the back? You can. So you don't need this, do you? You can hear me okay? Fine. Okay, I will kind of put it there. The reason I'm going to do this is I'll end up talking to this and clicking on that, you know? So, but if you can't hear me, yell. But I've never been known for being quiet. Okay, so community. Propaganda gardens. Let me show you some pictures of propaganda gardens. You want me to do that? Okay. Let me show you some pictures. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Of propaganda gardens. Okay. Now, there is no point in having a propaganda garden where nobody can see it. It's a no-brainer. So you need propaganda gardens right in the heart of where you live. Let me show you the first one. This is the first one we ever did. It used to look like this thing on the top right-hand side. It was basically a dog toilet. Okay? And because it was an unloved dog toilet, people also threw cans down there and cigarette packets and whatever else it might be. It's a small area on the side of one of our main roads in our town. So we thought, okay, let's do something about that. So without asking anybody's permission, why would you ask permission? We went and we put our gloves on and we turned it from looking like that into looking like this. We never asked for any money, because you don't start with money. You will need money eventually, but don't start with it, because then you have to have a conversation with the people that are giving it you, and then possibly you have to ask permission, and that's very tedious. Because the other thing about this whole thing is, most people want to say yes to do something different, but sometimes, particularly in the public sector, they don't know how to say yes. So I strongly suggest you don't ask them. And then when you've demonstrated what you meant, then they will meet you, because they understand it's your gift. It's positive. You're not taking, you're giving. So, don't want to get anybody in trouble, but that would be my advice. So, we went and we turned it into this here. So we planted herbs and cherry trees and all manner of things in this grass verge. Now, the interesting thing about doing that is all the way through with these slides, I want to show you how little actions can change people's behaviour.
You've not created a policy document. You've not got a national programme of behaviour change. You're just planting food. That's it. But what happened? Well, given it used to look like that, which meant that it was owned by the local authority, who never looked after it and didn't care whether people misused it, suddenly, 12 months after the community using its own resources to make it into a herb garden and a fruit garden, the council began to mow the lawn. And not only did they mow the lawn, but they put a bench in it so that people could sit there. We didn't ask them. They met us halfway. It's really quite interesting what growing veg can do for people. And then there's Mary's garden. Now, this is the second propaganda garden we did, which is actually in a private space, but it happened to be Mary, my friend's front garden. I do not suggest that you take over other people's private gardens. You would get into trouble. But if you happen to know them, it's quite a nice idea. So, Mary's house is in an important position in the town because it's at the bottom of a street that goes up to one of our housing estates where some of the poorest people in our town live. So Mary, who never does things by halves, took down her front wall, because this was a perfectly normal garden. In England, people plant flowers in their front gardens, and if they're going to grow vegetables, they do it out of sight. I don't know why they do that, but they do. Anyway, so Mary took down the wall and took out the roses and whatever was growing there that was flowers. You can eat flowers, yeah, but we'll get to that. And planted beans and herbs and kale and all manner of things. And a local sign maker, because this isn't just about growing, made us this sign. He did it for free. Because people do want, you'll be amazed how fantastic people are. They come out and they help you. And this was a sign that said, "This is incredible edible. Please help yourself. This is what's growing here. When it looks like this, it's not ready. When it looks like this, help yourself." Because in England, many people do not know how vegetables grow. They see them in a plastic bag in a supermarket that's been flown from wherever, but they've no idea, you know? So you have to tell them. You guys probably all know, but in England, we're a bit thick. So, now, the interesting thing is, in all propaganda gardens, it's help yourself, okay? Not because we have worked out that with our 20-odd, 30 propaganda gardens, we can feed 15,000 people. We are not stupid. But we are demonstrating the art of the possible. And we are redefining community and sharing. And hopefully, we're inspiring people to do it at home. So, it takes about 18 months to 2 years for somebody to be brave enough to pick from a propaganda garden. Because as a society, we have become get off, this is mine. Yeah? So, lest they be sued or shot or whatever, people walk past. But one day, I tell this in every story, and it's absolutely true, and for me, I knew we were on the right path to redefine in the future when this happened. A family, a mum and two children who walk every day past this garden to the school, stopped on the way home, climbed over the wall and picked vegetables and herbs and left. And we happened to see them because we were looking out of the window on that day. We don't spend our time looking out windows at people picking, but we happened to be there. So, that was good, and the children, some hours later, came back with the outside leaves of the cabbage and so on and put them in that green bin because the school had told them about ecology and recycling and compost and what have you, and that's great. But the following morning, on the doorstep of Mary's house, was a bowl of soup made from the vegetables picked in Mary's garden by complete strangers. That is redefining community. And all you've done is grown food. It's quite interesting. and then the health centre. Now, this is what I would call a no-brainer. So, here we have, in the middle of Todmorden, a brand new health centre clinic. Okay? It was about £6 or £7 million or something like that. And as in most cases, when they build public buildings, the landscaping is invariably inedible prickly plants. Now, that seems slightly mad to me, because whilst paying money to landscape things you can't eat, you then run, as a public service, a health campaign that eat five a day to try and get people to eat healthily. Okay. So why don't we rethink how we spend our money on landscaping? That would be the obvious thing to do, wouldn't it? So we went to the doctors, we did ask, and we said, could we pick all the inedible prickly plants, take them away, and could we replant edibles? And they said yes, provided it doesn't cost us anything and we don't have to do it. No problem, we said. So we fundraised and we planted apple trees and pear trees and raspberries and strawberries and herbs and all manner of things. And at the back, where there was car parking, we created an apothecary garden so that people could pick mint or have herb teas or whatever. Didn't cost the health people anything whatsoever. We did it. We still maintain it. And the interesting point is that we have families visiting the doctors, passing through edible landscapes of fruit they can pick and taste and talk to their children about. And we have families now, 2-3 years on from when we started this, who are making jam or preserves from the vegetables and the fruit that are growing around that doctor's surgery. And now we are visited by people who are building hospitals all over the country. And all we've done, it's really cheap, is planted edibles where before there were prickly plants. And then the job centre, increasingly well used, sadly. It used to look like this on the top right-hand corner. Now, honestly, you've lost your job, you've no money, and you have to walk past all that tarmac. How depressing is that? So we created in front, they asked us to do it, a simple raised bed. We did it in the middle of winter. It was snowing. It was a nightmare, but we did. Planting vegetables and herbs and so on. An act of faith, yes. But because there was a possibility that people with time on their hands might walk past this, that it was uplifting, as we know greenery and nature can be, that people were thinking about skills. Maybe I can do that. I've got spare time. Maybe I can start to grow more food. And so on. Small little actions that collectively start to change the way a community thinks. And we did the same at the community college bed. Unfortunately, we did upset a lot of people who had grown some beautiful roses at the front of that college bed, because we took the roses up and we planted vegetables. Now we have all become friends and we plant edible flowers as well as vegetables, and now we are all speaking to each other again. And because you have to do things that can make you smile, as well as things that are very worthwhile, we asked the local police station, which is on a main road in the middle of Todmorden, could we plant vegetables in front of their police station? And they said, yes, as long as it doesn't cost us and we don't have to do it. So we said, fine, we've heard that before. So that's what we did. And because we found it amusing, I know maize isn't, you know, a natural crop in the UK, but, you know, it was kind of big and boyish, and so we planted it. And the interesting thing about doing that is the police's own statistics say crime is down in the middle of the town because people do not vandalise food. Interesting. And community relations in town have never been better, because food is that bridge of happiness. Because when the community see the police watering those plants, or the police see the community picking those plants, it's a really joyous occasion. They smile. They're not the people who are going to arrest you. They're the people that can help you. It changes perceptions. And we did the same at the railway station, because we want people to visit our town sustainably. We want people to travel by train. So we planted herbs all along the platform at the railway station to pick and help yourself to, because anybody can do that. It costs nothing whatsoever. and then in a corner of the car park, which was horrible. We worked with some people from, we've got community payback, you know, people who have naughty boys and girls who are on a community order, and they helped us with this wood, which we got from a local builder's yard, because it was a demolition site, so it doesn't have to cost you necessarily a lot of money. And we made raised beds with potatoes and herbs and so on. And at the end of the day, if people take an entire bed of food, it's because they need an entire bed of food, so you replant it. You've not just destroyed a major building, you've just taken a crop. Replant it. So that's it. So, first off, communities, edible landscapes all over the place. Just start to redefine how you see space. You never see a bit of land the same again. I've looked around here and I think, oh my God, I could just grow so many things. Anyway, I won't. So, those are the edible landscapes of our everyday lives. What about learning? Well, it's really simple. Drip, drip, drip. You'll be well aware of many of these things. I can only again tell you about our story. You work with little children in the children's centre, so they get the feel of soil under their fingers, and they understand the actions of worms, and they start to eat some of the things that they're growing. And then you start to work with some slightly bigger children. And you know, because, please, let us understand, we are not the only species of any importance on this planet. Can we not start to respect other pollinators? So these wonderful kids, we got some money from the local lottery, and we did a programme on pollination along all our edible routes. It's fun. And then we use unusual spaces in our schools sometimes to grow things in. This was a bolt from a local park that was about to be demolished because it has a hole in it and therefore couldn't go on the water. So we brought it back from the park, we gave it to a school that didn't at that time want us to grow in their land, but they didn't mind us growing in the boat. Now they grow all over their land, but you have to start somewhere. And we obviously work with children in that same school. That school now teaches a certificate in horticulture and agriculture because the community around it wanted them to do it. It was hugely opportunistic that we lobbied for that to happen, but it did happen. And children that were coming out with no qualifications whatsoever, that were being told they, you know, they were the losers in life. Actually, they're starting to understand they are not the losers in life. These are the skills that we need in the future. And we use all sorts of spaces. This was a disused tennis court next to one of our schools. What is the point of unused concrete other than to build raised beds on and grow food? So that is what we did. And each of those raised beds is adopted by a member of one of our other estates so that they themselves can grow food and teach their children how to grow food. And besides that, this lady, nobody spoke to her till they understood that she actually knew how to grow. And now everybody knows this lady from Bengal. And because, I'm sorry about this, but because some of our schools are next, have no land whatsoever, but are next to cemeteries, where the soil is extremely good, we did ask permission. Of course we did. But that school is now growing in this land. And the interesting thing about that is not only is it growing food, but those children are not frightened of that cemetery anymore because it is a place that represents life, not death. Drip, drip, drip. And in that same high school where we presented the boats 5 years ago, we have now, with lottery funding, built an aquaponics unit. This is a school that was failing. This is a school whose buildings are an embarrassment. That we should teach our children in such poor quality buildings is shocking, but we do. But the community went into partnership with the school. We just made it up. We make everything up. And we applied to the lottery to build an aquaponics, hydroponics and growing centre at the land at the back of the school. I can show you pictures of it later. And now these children are learning the science of aquaponics, the science of growing fish sustainably in an urban setting, using the nutrients from the fish water to grow the crops, closing that cycle of sustainable food production, which more of us need to do we not, as the climate changes and austerity continues. And now we've also got polytunnels and all the things that you've already got. But these are run by the community for the community. We did our own fundraising. We did our own training. We've worked with, you know, local farmers in order to make this happen. And we now have apprentices that we, the community, support. And that's just the school stuff. You can't work in a school in isolation, can you? Because the child goes home to a family and a neighbourhood where it needs to have reflected the stuff that it's been doing in school. So, we have worked with 1,000 different individuals in our town doing nothing other than sharing skills. How to bake bread, how to pickle, how to graft a tree, how to create edible orchards all around our town at minimal cost. This is not clever stuff. We've just forgotten how to do it. And in our own town, some of our young people who were part of the Scouts movement decided themselves, we didn't do it, that they wanted to create an incredible edible badge. And now that is being adopted nationally. So again, another generation of young people being self-reliant, being confident around food. So, edible landscapes, new skills, reconnecting with old skills. What does that mean in terms of business? I cannot pretend for a second that we have turned around the economy of the UK, because we haven't. But we've done some pretty interesting things. If we are going to create local food economies, we have to do it with farmers, not against them. So, I had a meeting 4 years ago in Todmorden with the farming community. And they thought I was mad. They were really grumpy. What does this woman know about farming? She doesn't come from a farming family. And what does she know about the price of lamb and etc., etc.? And the proposition was really straightforward. We want to buy more of the food that you produce. Will you help us? Ugh. So, this is a long-term project. So I went away and I created a campaign, which is called Every Egg Matters. You could call it anything. But if you take one product produced by farmers and you created an uplift in the sales of that product, could you encourage farmers to understand that you were serious when you meant you wanted to support them? That's all there is. So, start with an egg. Why not? So, we did a stylized map. This is Todmorden. Doesn't actually look like that, but ish. And there were groups of people with small flocks, you know, 6, 7, whatever. And they were selling to their neighbours at the gate. So we found out who they were and we put them on the map. We had 4. And now we've got more than 60. People keeping chickens. People exchanging eggs. Now, the interesting thing is not that. The interesting thing is what happens then, because all you are doing is working with the grain of human behaviour. So, people then go into local shops or the local market and they say, can I buy local Todmorden eggs? And if they haven't got any, that supplier, that retailer, speaks to local farms and they say, we've got a bit of a demand for Todmorden eggs here. And they say, okay, next season I'll increase the amount of free-range birds I'm keeping. And when that sells, they think, well, I could do this with meat birds. And when that sells, well, I could divert slowly, small roots of confidence. You start to see that local supply chain starting to work, just starting to work. In our local market, we are a market town, but we have a dying local market. So rather than create a parallel market, what we want is the local market to be really vibrant, selling local food and local produce. So, we've no money. We're all volunteers. Nobody gets paid for doing this. What could we do? Well, we did some fundraising and we bought blackboards. And we gave a blackboard to every one of the local traders who were already selling local food. It's very cheap. And they wrote on it what they were selling. Pies, cheese, bread, meat, whatever. That attracted people to that stall to ask about that local food, to inquire about the animals, to taste the cheese, whatever, instead of automatically going to a supermarket and back. And suddenly they started to see, local food isn't necessarily more expensive. I just need to know how to cook things differently. I just need to rethink my daily shopping list. Some things are, but not everything. So suddenly, we start to see local food popping up all over the place in town. And Todmorden is a working class town. Okay? We're not all very rich in Todmorden. But we see local beers because we are a very wet area, so we're good for beer. So we see local beers. We see this chap on the right who is now making prize-winning cheeses from his local dairy herd. We see pies and breads and all manner of things in every one of our local shops and our local cafes because people will travel miles to eat local food. It is at the heart of the sustainable tourism product. People, if you want sustainable, responsible tourism, food is at the heart of it. And a local food survey that was done, and because people come from all over the world to help us, it's fantastic, but this chap came from the north of Italy and he did a survey. It's not the most robust survey that was ever done. It's one of those, okay? But it did give a very strong sense that not only were people buying more and asking about more, but local food retailers were actually seeing an uplift in their income. It's very slow. We've only been going 6 years. But it's quite interesting. We can imagine that that will allow the possibility of investment in businesses, apprenticeships in businesses, new jobs in businesses, new enterprise. Now, if you join all those dots together, community, learning, and business, what you can start to do is create community enterprises. And this is one which we call the Incredible Aqua Garden. And it's the one that I mentioned before, which is the partnership between the community and our high school. And it's very brave of the high school to do this because they're not really very good at this private sector stuff on the whole. And we're all learning. But we start with the children on the left, who are gaining the certificates in horticulture and growing. And we start to build polytunnels and we start to find some funding to take on apprentices that maybe can get the qualifications that maybe would help them be the farmers and the growers of the future. And then we land this lottery bid and we build this huge building. It's been a nightmare to build. I don't suggest you do this all the time, but anyway, that is the building and that is the drawing of it. It's now live, where we are learning the skills with local schools and with others on aquaponics and hydroponics, on growing fish sustainably, on growing food without soil, and in growing traditionally. This has never happened before. This is the only school in the country that does this, a school that thought it was failing. It's quite interesting how it's changed people's attitudes. And this is some of the aquaponics inside that we have a wonderful young man who comes from Brazil who is working with us as a volunteer because aquaponics is just such an exciting science that nobody has really cracked and that we're really trying to understand how we could grow fish sustainably in all our major towns and cities because we have a huge problem, do we not, about fishing internationally. And one of the other things was to create an incredible market garden training centre. This is just opportunism on the behalf of a community who's just cheeky enough to pull it off. We get some land donated to us because we always tell our story. We always appear in the local paper. We have a fantastic website created and run by a 68-year-old woman who was agoraphobic, who never left the house, and who now takes around all the guided tours and who now, you know, connects internationally with all the other people that are interested in Incredible Edible. She built the website. She told the story. So we get this land. It's very muddy. We put a fence around it because we were allowed to do that and because we'd got some funding from a local community support organisation. We have deer and rabbits, so that wasn't great if we're going to grow vegetables. And we turn it purely with the help of volunteers into a place on the bottom left-hand corner, where communities have their own raised bed, grow their own food, exchange conversations, learn new skills. And we've got apprentices now who are gaining qualifications so that they themselves can go on to become food producers of the future. In those last two social enterprises which we've created, we employ five people, and we've got four apprentices. And it's purely driven by the community. We have been opportunistic in taking funding opportunities, but we've also been creative. Because one of the things we do is every time I do a talk, wherever, or every time one of our vegetable tourists, which I'll tell you about, visits us, we charge a small fee. And that goes into an apprentice pot, and that is what employs the local people. You don't have to ask people for money, you just have to be a bit creative. So, yes, the other thing we've done to try and support our economy is to create a new form of tourism. So, vegetable tourism is where people come from all over the world to look at this wet little northern market town and poke around in raised beds where there often isn't anything growing. But they do it not to look at the food, they do it to be inspired about what they can do back home. And we do have people from all over the planet. We are very big in Korea and China. Russia adores us. God knows why. After the earthquake in New Zealand, in Christchurch, all those years ago, planners came over to see how they could incorporate edibles into the heart of Christchurch and lift people's spirits and bring people together. And mainland Europe has been fantastic. And, you know, it's a joy to be with you today. So thank you for inviting me. Not finished yet. So what could we do for our tourists? Well, working with some designers at Goldsmiths College London, free of charge, because people do this all voluntarily, they created this green route map. It was just made up. If you've got tourists visiting the town and you've got propaganda beds, how are you going to do something that helps people have a better experience? Well, you join up the propaganda beds and you get people walking through the town. You call it the incredible green route. This has now been adopted by the doctors as the incredible health route. This is many faceted. So all that we did was join up lots of propaganda beds, but also we took people through our shops, our small cafes, and our market hall, so that visitors to the town visited every bit of the town, not just the supermarket. We're not opposed to supermarkets, but we are for an alternative local food proposition. That's all we do. So some pictures of what we've done. Well, these wonderful people are from Venezuela, and they got off the train, and this is the bed at the station that I showed you earlier with the, you can't see the clock tower. Anyway, there they are on a sunny day. It does sunshine in Tobinon sometimes. And then they walk through the town along our canal towpath. Now, what we did with our canal towpath, we'd never asked permission for this because that would have been just taking too long. So we got this canal towpath, which a lot of families walk, you know, along. But again, it was misused by dogs and people who threw cigarettes and whatever. So we cleaned it all up and we planted herbs and fruit trees and so on and so forth to create an edible towpath. And then with that same money that we got when you saw the children dressed as pollinators, we got a local artist very, very cheaply to build a structure which eventually became, and I can't remember if I've got a picture of this or not. No, I haven't. I'll go back. Became a structure, a willow structure, that kids went in and they'd walk around and they'd pop out the end and there'd be a sign that said, "You've just done the waggle dance of the bee. Now go and find out more about it." It's just great. Just make it up as you go along. It's really cheap and cheerful. So now we've got entire stretches of our canal that is edible. And the national chair of the canals network visited us and said, "We should do this everywhere in England." They really want to say yes. Don't bother asking them. And then some of our businesses on the high street, which is on our green route, have adopted the same principle. Again, they just did it. This is a physiotherapist who's planted edibles to share outside. We've got a theatre down the road that's done the same thing. Towards the end of the route, we've created this green space. Again, just being opportunistic. This was the space of a former health centre. And when it was demolished, it was surrounded at the beginning of the recession by hoardings, by a horrible wooden fence. The whole thing, right next to our market hall. Now, if you're going to regenerate your town, you need to start at its heart. So we persuaded the local authority to let us take the hoardings down. And we would plant up edibles in the middle of our town, right next to our market. And they agreed. We'd been going 5 years by then. They could see that we were doing something. We were bringing visitors to the town. We had gained credibility. If we'd have asked at the beginning, we wouldn't have got a yes. But because we did it 5 years in, they said yes. So we took the hoarding down. And on the right-hand side, you can see there is a street sign and there is a beehive. Now, the beehive isn't real. It's just a storyline. And the sign isn't real. We just made it up. It's called Pollination Street. So we stuck that there, and we have got all around there fruit, vegetables, herbs, whatever. Very simple. That's all there is. But interestingly enough, we did that. The council then created a meadowland to the left and put picnic benches there. How fantastic is that? So right in the middle of our town, when there was a dead space, we now have what feels like a village green, where people can celebrate and have festivals right next to the market hall, where they can buy the food, sit on the picnic benches, enjoy cheap family fun. There's endless opportunities about what you can actually do. And sharing the journey with us, wherever we've got a little seed blob, that's where there's an incredible edible town. We don't know yet whether all of them are doing all three plates the same way, because we're just volunteers and we're waiting. You know, we've got hundreds of people doing this, but, you know, sometimes we haven't got enough time to visit all these places, but they are all growing food in public places. They are all reskilling how to grow, how to share, how to cook, and they are all supporting their local food producers in some way. There's a lot in the north where we are. There's some fabulous ones in Northern Ireland, which is this bottom right-hand corner, which is where Catholic and Protestant children are working together to grow food. Never happened before. It's happening now. People just willing to change. We've got housing estates that are sponsoring, you know, community growing. We've got this is a place in leafy Cheshire, which is quite posh, really, and they're growing vegetables right in the heart of the high street. You do it wherever you can. And all over the world, we've kind of started to spread our message. The TED talk helped, but actually there's nothing spreads like, you know, actions that people can actually do without permission. You can see France has gone mad. All over France, they are growing things all over the place. And a little bit in Spain. And I would make a plea here, because I've been over to Barcelona quite a few times to talk to people around the university, because they wanted to start propaganda gardens in the university campus. A statement in the heart of town about what you can do, how you can create edible landscapes. It started and it stopped. So I'm over again, because eventually we will do it. And there's a wonderful young man who is a lecturer at the university in architecture, who is working with us to try and make that happen. So if there's anybody here that wants to make that happen as well, I can put you in contact with him. It would be fantastic. It's a statement of hope. That's what it's about. And it's a statement of opportunity. And we've got an incredible network, so that people all over can talk to each other. Communities can share ideas with communities. Teachers with teachers. Hospital workers with hospital workers. Cooks with cooks. Tenants with tenants. It's a people's movement. If you eat, you're in. It's not about, you know, professional qualifications. It's about a passion and a will to live a different future. And ultimately, it's a belief in the power of small actions, because they are awesome and you can move mountains. And that's incredible edible. Thank you very much.